Number two, a lot going on out there. I hope all of you are taking care of yourselves. This issue of shedding, again, at this point, is probably the number one issue. And you must take care of yourself. And no one's going to do it for you. They want everybody to mix and be happy and hug and all the rest of it. And that is not what is called for now. We've made that abundantly clear for a long, long time now. We're into our third year of trying to help people. We think that the 30%, 20% who did not take the injection here in the U.S., for example, are the target of the shedding. The shedding was built into this from day one. It's nothing new, but it is, it's clearly manifesting on the social media platforms that Erica monitors all the time, in addition to other aspects of information like medical papers, peer-reviewed papers that make it quite clear that people are shedding not only the spike protein, but the mRNA as well. You don't want either one of them in your body, period. Welcome back, partner. How you doing?
Thanks, Jeff. I'm doing good. How about you?
Well, on top of the world.
All things
singing
considered.
A song. The time of my life. If you believe that, all right, let's see. Here's some headlines, just real quick. Demonic genocidal maniacs at the World Health Organization are ramping up development of all kinds of vaccines. We know that. We've touched on that in the past. I just want all of you to be ready, because if this thing doesn't get to where they want it to be, for whatever reason, they're going to roll out something else, like the bird flu, right? Marburg, perhaps. Maybe both. They're going to keep that fear level up. That's how they do it. It's all about fear. Here's another one. World Health Organization hope to test experimental Marburg virus vaccines amid the current deadly outbreak in Africa. Now, if you remember, Van den Bosch said, do not vaccinate during an outbreak or a pandemic because it'll cause mutations. So certainly the World Health Organization knows that very well. Got a story going up about how the U.S. government is tracking the uninjected, the unvaxxed in America, and they are keeping very close tabs on as many as they can. Fingerprints of unvaxxed New York City teachers were sent to the FBI. A new discovered affidavit says. Isn't that nice? Okay, Scientific Review challenges the fact that masks reduce transmission. Fact in quotes. Scientific Review is challenging the fact that masks reduce transmission. Well, there's a war on masks now. Masks do help. No, they're not the cure-all, end-all, and be-all of staying safe. But they're better than nothing. It's just like putting gloves on. They're better than nothing. So we highly recommend masks. And the little item you wear around your neck, the personal unit, that you can see on the homepage right above headline news. It's a little white thing, and we wear them all the time. I guess a lot of people are now. That's a very good thing to do. So just a few of the things out there.
Definitely gaining in popularity, and they do. I mean, the word is those that are sensitive do feel a difference when they use these things.
Right. Several more stories. I won't go into it right now. There is something of note, though, and we've been watching this for some time. As all of you know who are veterans of this horror, ivermectin is something that the government does not like us to have. They've made it very difficult. They've stopped distribution of it through normal channels. Some hospitals will prescribe it. Most apparently won't. I don't have a statistical breakdown of that for you. But ivermectin, factually, in many cases that we know about directly, and we presented on this program, when introduced into someone who is severely ill in the hospital, causes them to recover quickly, like a day or two. So it has been seen to do a lot of good things. We have warned and implored people not to take it on a prophylactic basis. It's not what you want to do. We'd suggest you keep it, if you have some, keep it safe in case you need it. That's simple. Let's just keep it on the table like that. The ivermectin story, the war on ivermectin, is taking some pretty dark turns. They are making statements through these stories and various mouthpieces on the internet in the alt news that ivermectin can cause cancer, can do all kinds of things that are inimical to healthy lifestyles. Tell us more.
Yeah, so I guess this has kind of started up again sometime within the last couple of weeks, and it's getting rather vicious and rather aggressive. It's fear-mongering on steroids. What they're claiming it can be backed up by studies, so it does, you know, warrant some consideration. But again, we have to look at who's pushing it. And in many cases, it's these virus deniers and their messages that for those that refuse to take the vax and who are relying on ivermectin to save them from the bioweapon, they're really doing themselves a great disservice because, number one, it's going to make them sterile. And number two, it may cause neurodegeneration. So maybe that's true. There are studies that support some of what they're saying, certainly. But at the end of the day, I cannot ignore how many people have been saved from death, really, when they were able to have access to ivermectin. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the government, the CDC, the WHO, have tried to dissuade Americans to the best of their ability through all methods possible to prevent them from taking this medication. You can't even get it up in Canada, or they've made it inordinately difficult. Same with Australia.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's the same in the UK and in Europe. If this thing was as lethal as this latest ad campaign is implying, I would think that Justin Trudeau would want his people to have plenty of it. And yet...
Yeah. Here's the other side of the ivermectin story. I'm qualifying this because I'm not a scientist. It may be the most responsible, viable antiviral out there. And if it works on COVID-19, why wouldn't it work on Marburg? Why wouldn't it work on H5N1? Maybe that's the issue.
Yeah, people have already looked at that, and it does look like that. Yes, yes.
So that would be reason enough for the powers that be to declare war on ivermectin and really try to destroy its reputation. I don't think that's going to happen because too many people have been helped by it. And I would also suggest that mammals are mammals within reason. Ivermectin has been used on $10 million Kentucky Derby winning racehorses, for example, for decades, ever since it came out. No horses have suffered. Those people would never do anything that would cause their prize horses to suffer damage.
Horse owners spare no expense to keep their horses healthy.
None. So there you go. All right. Well, keep that in mind. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was always apprehensive about taking it or even prophylactically. I think if there's other more natural alternatives, that's always a better way to go. There are people out there that are consuming it rather casually, very frequently. We've never used that in humans like this. I mean, it's already an off-label use. This was intended for parasites. We're now using it for viral infections. We don't really know what the long-term consequences of taking this habitually is going to be. So there is that consideration. And the other thing you have to look at, if they're really desperate, I mean, this product is susceptible to adulteration in the manufacturing process.
Say that a different way, just for fun.
You may think you're buying ivermectin. It may say ivermectin on the label, and yet it might be something not very good for you.
They could so-called spike it. All right, they could taint it.
They could do whatever they wanted to it, you know. And so
we don't know. I'm not saying
you have to think about that.
Yeah, you need to put that on your little mental table and factor that in. I would suggest probably not. We have no reason to think that's happening at all. I did have one person say that recently the horse paste didn't seem to be working as quickly and as well as it used to. I don't remember the person, but that was said to me. It's totally anecdotal. I don't know if it's true or not. I have no idea. I do know that if I got sick, I would probably jump on it first. That's me.
Yeah.
I'm not making
a
recommendation.
I mean, the contraindications are that you don't want to be using it if there's any chance you have a leaky blood-brain barrier, because this is not a medication you want to get into the brain or the central nervous system. So they do make that one caveat. And in fact, in dogs, they do test them for a genetic mutation called MDR1, multidrug-resistant 1 gene, to see if they are susceptible to essentially a poisoning by ivermectin. It would be a neurological type of poisoning. And just for dog lovers, the rule of thumb is white feet don't treat. Because it's typical that dogs with white feet, which tend to be the herding dogs, often do carry that gene, and they should not be given ivermectin. Now, people can also have mutations in that gene, and they would not do well taking ivermectin.
I thought you were going to say people also could have white feet. I have white feet. I looked.
Well, then you need some sun.
Boy,
but if you're also taking a variety of other different medications, that's going to affect how ivermectin is metabolized and may make you susceptible because of that.
So I think,
and that would be things like statins, corticosteroids, benzodiazepines, protease inhibitors. So you do want to do a little bit of research. Don't take it on blind faith.
You can't, unfortunately, go buy a test kit to find out if you have a leaky blood-brain barrier. That isn't out. So how would people How would they look into that?
In general, if you have a leaky gut, you probably have a leaky blood-brain barrier.
So I get a leaky gut kit? A test kit for that?
No, you would go off of symptoms. I mean, a lot of times people that have a leaky gut have a lot of food allergies. They react to all kinds of things because these larger protein molecules get into the bloodstream. They don't get digested. They slip right through into the bloodstream and provoke the immune system.
Right. All right. We want to make sure everybody understands best we can present all this material. Now, there's one other brief angle. I just kind of feel like we might want to mention it. The mechanism by which the spike goes into the digestive tract and raises hell to the extent that I'm told that some people who have been injected literally have no bacteria left in their digestive tract. How does the spike do it? And it has to do with the ACE2. So just give us a real quick thumbnail on that.
Well, so that ACE2 receptor, which is the preferred receptor of the virus and the spike, it's designed to latch onto that. Those are very prevalent in the digestive tract, the intestinal tract. So when the spike or the virus enters, it will dock onto those in the digestive tract and basically downregulate them, shut them off. And this is significant because the ACE2 is required, ACE2 receptor is required to absorb and regulate the tryptophan. Now, tryptophan is an essential amino acid that comes from protein that the body uses to make serotonin, melatonin, and it can also be used as a precursor to, eventually, NAD, which is the molecule or coenzyme that you need to generate ATP. No NAD, no ATP. So the other thing that this shutting off the tryptophan regulation does is the beneficial bacteria that colonize your digestive tract need tryptophan to make antimicrobial peptides, which keep pathogenic bacteria at bay. So when they're deprived of tryptophan, you very quickly get an overgrowth of pathogenic bacteria in the gut. And this is one of the reasons people with COVID or the virus, and maybe even just plain old spike protein poisoning, feel it in the gut. They really do have some serious digestive issues, gut issues.
Right.
And I suspect many of these people resort to taking an antibiotic, which brings short-term relief, but you pay a big price for it in the end because it just
wipes out the rest
more
of your bacteria.
You could be wiping out, as Jeff said, all of the bacteria, and that makes you even more susceptible. And that is one of the strategies that was discussed as a potential bioweapon. It was called the clean slate, where you make people sick to the point where they have to take an antibiotic to overcome whatever it is that's infecting them. And then at that time, once they finished the course of antibiotics and they pretty much wiped out all of their bacteria, beneficial protective bacteria, then you introduce the second part of the weapon because they have no defenses at that point to fight it off.
And keep in mind that everyone who has taken a valid, viable injection or two or three or four or five and maybe even six has taken something that is with them now and has given them AIDS. They have an acquired immune deficiency syndrome complex that can range from mild to severe. In other words, the door to infection is wide open. So be aware.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, what we're going to do is go to some of our human stories for a little bit. We're going to try and get caught up on those. There's some really powerful and moving accounts that come from real people who have no voice in the media in this country. No voice. They don't exist. The backs of the nation have been turned on all those who have been maimed and injured and are made chronically severely ill in many cases by this injection, this biological weapon, which is doing precisely what it was designed to do and deployed to do. It is a big success. It is killing people. It is killing them on a number of different fronts, under a number of different names, on a number of different settings, and they are dead. But it's easy to put a different cause of death on dozens of them because that's the game that's being played. You'll never see a cause of death on a death certificate that says Pfizer injections. Five Pfizer injections. You won't see that. You'll see stroke, clot, heart this, heart that. You'll see all kinds of kidney. You'll see all kinds of things. And that's how they're getting away with it. All right. We have some stories from the myocarditis group. Now, it has been said that every single person who has taken a valid, viable injection has myocarditis. Symptomatic? Maybe. Maybe not, but they have suffered heart damage. If you remember the Dr. Daniel Nagase video that we played four or five programs ago now, he made it very clear how the spike will swarm the human heart and any other organ, but if it swarms the human heart, it will interfere with the bioelectrical process that causes the heart to beat. End of life right there. That's what died suddenly in many cases apparently is. Spike protein just all over the heart, in the heart. That's just one example. So myocarditis
and
is bad. Go ahead.
If and when the inflammation subsides, you're left with scar tissue. And scar tissue doesn't conduct very well. It will not conduct electrical signals the way a healthy heart does.
That's important, yeah.
And then there's also, separate and apart from that, the amyloid, deposits of amyloid throughout that tissue, that organ.
Microclotting, amyloid resulting, capillary function shut down in the heart. The heart is teetering along on 50% of normal blood flow, maybe after 6 months of spike infestation. We don't know, but we do know that this is what happens. And Nurse Anne will be with us on Friday, and she has, on multiple occasions, talked about, speaking of ivermectin, she's made it very clear that she's seen a number of patients who have been made well, or virtually well, as far as she can tell, very quickly after the introduction of ivermectin. So you just need to do your research.
Yeah. I think it was the very first program she did with us. She made a point of saying that, when the pandemic first started and they were getting these types of patients in with the clotting, mm-hmm. and the bilateral pneumonia, they were losing a lot of patients. These patients were critically ill, and just, I don't know what they were using for medication at that time, but at some point along that way, ivermectin was introduced. And she noticed that things started to turn around for these people. They were not losing as many. They were able to bring them back. And I don't know how long ivermectin was available, probably several months, maybe not even. And then they decided that, no, they're not going to use it.
Right.
So make of it what
even
you will.
Even though it was actually in most hospitals and was available on request, they never mentioned it. They mentioned remdesivir,
right.
And that's what they talked people into taking. And that's how they got the numbers they got the first year and a half, and are still getting numbers from. So, okay. All right, myocarditis, the symptomology is relatively horrible. It is, imagine your heart physically hurting around the clock, pain in your heart, adjoining issues symptomatically, the heart, tachycardia, racing heart, a lot of things. Myocarditis is horrible, yes, a horrible burden for someone to carry. And I'm trying to think if we have any real, honest-to-God, anecdotal, cases of people who have beaten it and gotten back to baseline normal. And I don't remember one.
There, Dr. John Campbell, with his YouTube channel there, he did interview a couple people who have had it. One in particular stands out, Kyle. He's interviewed him a couple of times, and Kyle was a young man. I believe he was into bicycle racing, and was gravely injured with these shots. And little by little, he fought his way back. But he really did have to be assertive about getting treatment, getting the right treatment. And if something wasn't working, you got to stay on top of the doctors. If you can find a doctor to help you.
If you can find a doctor that will help you. And if you can find
a doctor.
No. They're sick of this. They've been shot up, most of them. They're done. They just don't want to deal with this. They see the same people. Sort of. They see the same profile in the same sort of people. They know what's going on. Those who are not into grotesque self-denial, they know what's going on. They know where this is going to go. They'll prescribe the same regimen of tests and evaluations, and the poor people are eventually told, well, there's really nothing we can do to you. Nothing for you anymore.
A lot of these people are just given the runaround. They'll wait for weeks, if not months, to get an appointment with a specialist, and nothing comes of that appointment.
Nope. They don't want it. You can tell. The stories we hear sometimes make it quite clear that the doctors could care less. Maybe they couldn't care less. I don't know. All right. Let's go look at some of these stories. 1, 2, 3, 4. Ladies first.
Okay. I believe this is a young woman in the UK. She says, "Hi all. I've had pericarditis after my vax in April of 2021. It took some months for them to actually start treating me for it. Fast forward to May 2022, when I was hospitalized with myopericarditis. Troponin levels slightly elevated, etc. I had an MRI in August, which confirmed scarring from myocarditis, but no active inflammation.
That's a year after. One year later.
Right. 1 year later. Since getting treatment with Remipril and colchicine, I got so much better. 2 weeks ago, however, I got a dry cough. It hurt in my chest when coughing, but went away 3 to 4 days later. Then, on Monday last week, the breathlessness started again. Then also chest pains all across the chest and stabbing pain in the heart area started again. Last Friday, I went to my GP. He told me I have a heart murmur, apparently quite prominent. And he reported me to cardiology, as I'm still under them, but no reaction. Yesterday, I went to A&E, as the stabbing pains were there in the morning already, which is usual for me. They start once I'm awake. They said no heart murmur to be heard. They said no EKG abnormalities, X-ray clear, and bloods too. Sent me home and told me to take ibuprofen and paracetamol, in addition to my other meds. Today, I had a follow-up with my cardiologist. She said, from a cardiology view, there isn't anything they can do for me. No changes in med either, as there's no inflammation, according to my blood. The only thing she can do is speak to her team to see what others may suggest doing. The murmur is apparently not there or very benign, and it wouldn't matter. Meanwhile, I sit here not well and feel that, unless it's on paper, nobody believes me. Has anyone had pericarditis symptoms without proof in their blood, etc.? I'm worried that they'll chin me off again, like 2 years ago, and that I'll get worse again before anything will be done.
All right. An answer to that from Marie.
That's a new thread?
All right.
Yep.
I feel that I have gone backwards to the very first stages. I am in pain. My heart is racing. I have a cough. I feel faint. My chest is tight. I have a lot of stress, and maybe it's sent me backwards. I have sat and cried so much this morning. And a response to that from the first person that Erica read. Oh, I'm in the same position. I had a cough, and back to the beginning. Worrying and crying will make it worse. Try to take deep, slow breaths, and calm your thoughts. This may only last a day or two. Maybe it's a bug, and you'll get through it. And the other person says, it's been 5 days. I can't sleep. The pain is unbelievable. And a question, are you taking any meds? Maybe go see your GP. And the response to that, 22. Is this another person?
This is another comment to that.
Okay. 22 months of unbearable pain. Now, all of you try to imagine that. 22 months of unbearable pain in your chest, in your heart. What kind of quality of life is that?
I can't even imagine.
I can't. No, 22 months? I couldn't imagine 2 weeks. 22 months of unbearable pain, 10 hospital visits, over $350,000 for medical expenses. Meds, doctors, specialists are useless. Not even nitroglycerin or morphine helps. When I can't sleep from pain and crying makes it worse. I get up to use the bathroom, dress in something soft and warm and cuddly. I sip some hot, relaxing tea, rub CBD, arnica or comfrey, where it hurts the most, put a warm heated cloth over and lay back down and turn the lights off and pray. I thank God my kids and close friends are not going through what I am. Then I relive a happy memory in time of laughter, joy, and sheer bliss while I breathe slow, deep, and pray. Usually I go to a place near water. When I was 4, I loved to play in the city pool in summer. When I was 14, I would float in the lake. Reliving these events helps me relax and focus on something pleasurable, just long enough to forget about the pain and fall back to sleep. My body needs sleep, lots of it, to heal. Stay blessed. In daytime, I eat as healthily as I can afford. I stay stress-free and take black seed oil, ashwagandha, turmeric, and ginger rosemary, skullcap, valerian, artichoke, and dandelion. These help me reduce inflammation. I say no more to others. Say yes more to me. Go ahead.
All righty.
Number four.
Started all over with any virus that enters my body. So that seems to be a trigger to have this myocarditis come roaring back. Someone asked, have you tried any high-dose Motrin to bring the inflammation down? Another says, same spot. I'm really sorry. And the original poster says, yes, thank you. It's awful. Take care. And the last person says, stress can make you relapse as much as getting sick. Know your triggers. Try meditating to music with binaural beats with headphones. It induces relaxing brain waves that have a calming effect on the nervous system.
Hmm.
So these people, they're really left on their own.
Nothing
just
else we can do
floundering.
For you. Nothing else we can do for you. I'll ask my staff and see if they have any ideas, but in the meantime, just go home and do your best. Now, we have other issues of an internal nature as well. Go ahead and read the next one. This is about pancreas problems. Now, pancreas involvement is something that we have heard a good deal about.
Well, I think we can surmise that it's partially from this P53 gene, the BRCA1 gene, that is the spike interferes with. And that gene is known to play a part in cancer of the breast, ovary, and pancreas and prostate. So we are seeing in these people who have had the vax a frequent occurrence of cancer of the pancreas. There could be other reasons, but this one is very prevalent, and it tends to be diagnosed very late in the disease, so it leaves very little treatment options, as it tends to be very advanced. But then again, most of these cancers we're hearing about in the vaxxed tend to be very advanced by the time they're diagnosed.
Oh, it's stage
anyway,
four quite often. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
This kind of took me by surprise because I actually know this person, and not very well, but I, you know, I follow her her escapades on Facebook, and she's always putting out lots and lots of happy posts about, you know, adventures, just life in general. Tends to be a very upbeat person, but I was aware that she did get the shot a couple years ago, and I don't know how many more after that. And she was in the hospital at least once, probably a year ago, for some, just diagnostic things having to do with her innards. So I was shocked when I read this morning. She says, I received a phone call today regarding my results of the MRI I had done on my pancreas. The three lesions they found are on the head of my pancreas. They're called intraductal pancreatic mucinous neoplasms. These neoplasms are known to cause cancer. I've been symptomatic for 3 years, but as time has gone by, more and more symptoms were starting to reveal themselves. The most concerning was the constant nausea, unable to have pressure under the left side of my rib cage. I'm also having night sweats every night, a point to where I am drenched every morning. I am being referred to a doctor that specializes in aspirating those lesions on a pancreas. Now it's to sit and hopefully get the call to get that done. Just asking for a few more prayers. Safe to say, 2023 has been a shit show of a year so far. And
this
person
lady,
is not that. I'm guessing she's in her 40s, so not terribly old.
And when you see people like this lady out and about, they're going to look fine to you. You're not going to have any overt signs that they're in pain or discomfort or having serious symptoms of pancreatitis or whatever she's got. I've always been very concerned about aspirating. That's a biopsy usually. You look up, can biopsies spread cancer? Just do a search for that sometime. I'll leave it up to all of you. Can biopsies spread cancer or cause cancer to spread? And the answer is yes. The body tends to wall cancers off. If you go in there and break that little capsule, so to speak, and introduce blood flow into it or oxygen, it can have a very unpleasant result. I'll leave it at that. You do your research. Okay.
Not looking good.
No, and again, people aren't going to show it. They're going to hide it, and that's human nature.
This took me by surprise. You would never know it. It was not visible on the exterior, you know, whatever kind of happy face people show to the world.
Apparently, I don't know Facebook, but they post pictures, and I've done this, I did that, and look how happy I am. And yet they're not talking about the real horror they're facing. And it is a horror.
Yeah.
No joke. Okay. Let's go on.
I guess we can go back to February 1st and clean those up.
Sure. We can do that. We can play a few minutes of John O'Looney. I think we maybe should get some of these readers done, though.
Okay.
Okay, we've got demonic shedding, 1, 2, 3 through 9.
Did we do all those?
We got
through
5.
Part of them.
I don't know how many. We should probably redo 5 and go on from there. Why don't you go ahead with 5?
All right. Well, this little prelude. This was about how, people that are exposed to the jab, they're being shedded on and having weird dreams as a result. And, okay, number 5 says, I really appreciate this information. I know a lot about MK Ultra, but I didn't know about that, and it definitely makes sense. I mean, this is out of context, so I have no idea what she's talking about. This is the only place I can go for answers. I am really scared of my husband. Okay, this is a husband that's sleeping with, was it a gun under the bed?
Yeah.
Under his pillow? Yeah.
He's gotten
and all
very
my family and friends.
And all that. Yeah.
Right. Are jabbed, and they think I'm crazy for not being jabbed, so they won't listen to me when I say that I am not safe in my own home. And
she's sleeping in another bedroom. She's quite afraid of her husband, I remember now, and he has gone to sleeping with a gun, which is fine.
He's not jabbed. He's just going to work and being around people that are jabbed and obviously being affected by it.
Yep.
So someone replies to her, if the past 2 years have taught you anything, I would think the biggest takeaway is physicians are not to be trusted.
Wow. All right, here's the next one. I was literally in meetings 2 years ago where doctors were talking about ways to convince the vaccine hesitant to get jabbed so the clinic would get more money. We've had multiple patients die suddenly, immediately, after getting jabbed in their clinic. They die on the clinic property, and it all gets covered up. How many stories like that are there? Response to that, wow, if it happens daily, then it's ghost or demon attachment. It usually attacks people or follows people with similar frequency or energy. Last week, 1, weakness, 2, sickness, 3, unlucky, 4, sad, 5, body aura. There's a weak with hole that it can enter. He's talking about demonic spirits. So is this somebody over the edge, or is this somebody who's done a lot of research and is really worried about this for whatever reason? Here's the next part of that thread. This is what baffles me. that Christians took the jab. It's a satanic jab. I'm speaking for myself, but I wouldn't argue with that. This is pure evil. It's a satanic jab. I agree that they need to recognize what they did, repent with all their heart, and ask Jesus for healing. A pastor I know took the jab, got serious injuries from it, and months later, when I saw him in my previous church, there was a dark, looming shadow around him. It freaked me out, and I had to leave the area. It sent chills down my back. And then one comment to that, if a pastor can't communicate with God, then might as well not be a pastor. Well, that's a pretty fair statement.
Oh, you missed the first line there.
Go ahead.
See it? Many pastors are fake.
Are fakes. Yeah. Well, that's rule number one. Whenever you're involved with organized religion, especially if they're involved with telepresentations, okay? They're all, as David Oates has amply demonstrated with reverse speech, they're all fakes.
Mm.
And they don't have to be on TV to be fakes. So, yeah, I did miss that. Okay, go ahead with the next one. That's the last one in this group.
Okay, I just wanted to tell the group of what my daughter's triple-jabbed boyfriend is dealing with. He's been having terrifying, vivid, out-of-body dreams of horrifying demons pulling on him all night. He can literally feel them while he's watching from above. He is so scared to sleep alone, so he's been staying at our house because he's in a dorm by himself.
Hold on. This is very interesting. I just wanted to tell the group what my daughter's triple-jabbed boyfriend is dealing with. He's having terrifying, vivid, out-of-body dreams of demons pulling on him all night. He can literally feel them while watching from above in his dream state. This is another aspect of this thing that we haven't spent much time on, but the spiritual aspect is very important. Go ahead. It's interesting.
Okay, someone says to that, is he? What age is he? And is he fully sober when those dreams happen, not under the influence of alcohol or drugs? She answers, he's 19 and doesn't drink or use drugs. He's never even tried them. His dad is a pastor, and he was wanting to follow in his footsteps. And someone else adds, I had similar a while ago when I was ill with something or other. I'm not jabbed. It was like a massive spiritual battle going on in my dreams. Maybe get him to try imagining big, thick roots coming from his feet and anchoring him to the earth before he goes to sleep.
Hmm. Okay, well, we'll watch for this particular subject, see if we come up with any more demonic issues. All right, dog coronavirus vaccine.
Yeah.
Not a good
one? That's just people misinterpreting things. That's not that interesting. I mean, it's just...
Where do we go?
How about iron deficiency?
Where is it? Oh, there it is. Yeah. Oh, my. And the next one after that?
No.
Okay. It's iron deficiency. There was a podcast of a doctor's on a show where he was showing non-jabbed kids, not related, from non-jabbed parents were picking shedding up from daycare or school. What they all had in common was their blood cells clumped up like jabbed blood. The doctor gave the kids iron, and it's helped them. When I heard this, I went to get Mega Food Blood Builder, and the bruising stopped. And my hands and feet are warm now. I'm sure there is much more we don't know, though. Well, as far as rushing out to take iron supplements, no. That's not necessarily what you want to do.
Yeah, the blood's being destroyed. I mean, the body has no way of getting rid of iron. You have to remember that. Unless, you know, bloodletting, that's it. It has no natural mechanism to offload anything. So what happens is it ends up, over the course of a lifetime, being stored in organs and tissues. And what's going on with this spike poisoning is a form of anemia called anemia of chronic inflammation. So the body is sequestering its iron stores in organs and tissues and pretty much taking it out of the blood. So that's why these people are becoming anemic. And it won't get corrected. Iron will not correct that. Adding iron or taking iron typically will not correct that. Or if it does, it's for a transient period of time, 6 weeks at the most, and then you'll need it again. But what happens to that iron that you took previously? Well, that gets stored into the tissues, and it builds up, and it builds up, and it builds up. And when you're also having this ischemia reperfusion happening from microclotting, that iron becomes a catalyst for free radicals. And this is how, you know, these lipids are becoming oxidized, and DNA is getting damaged, proteins are getting damaged. So it becomes a vicious cycle. What's the correct way to treat that? I'm not sure. Get rid of the spike protein. You know, you take away the source of the inflammation, and that thing would correct itself. But if you're constantly getting exposed to spike, that's not going to happen.
Nope. And if you're working around them or hanging around those who have taken the injections, you're going to get shed upon. There's nothing you can do about it.
And there's many reasons why anemia is not always due to a lack of iron. That's the big mistake. A lot of times it's due to a lack of bioavailable copper. And I know that some people have been helped by taking a supplement of copper. Whether or not that's the right thing in this situation, I don't know. It's possible. I mean, many people are copper toxic. And if you're not manufacturing ceruloplasmin, which is the protein needed to regulate your copper, then that copper is going to be toxic. So, and then you also need a suite of B vitamins, folic acid, folate, B12, to build a red blood cell. So, there's many factors involved in anemia. There's no pat response that's going to be right for everybody. Your iron status needs to be evaluated very carefully, not just iron levels, but the way the body is handling the iron.
Very good. All right. Iron is something to be aware of. All right. Peak shedding times.
Okay.
Let's try that. What are the peak shedding times? The weeks following inoculation is the response. Then when they get sick, and then sadly, prior to death. Next statement to that one. Does it smell like alcohol at all is a question, and the answer is, from a person, to me, it's a rancid metallic smell. And there's another response to that. Not sure, was wondering about perfume smell that can be stretched to meters away at a certain location, and was wondering why this perfume is so popular. That's kind of a funny reaction. Why is everyone wearing that perfume? I keep sensing that smell at that location. All right. Somebody's working at that location who's giving off that aroma. Both my daughters appear healthy. One has just gone back to work in a restaurant. Both had babies 5 weeks apart, May and June of last year. Neither, took the vax. However, the one with the vaxxed partner took the whopping whooping cough one, a vaccine for whooping cough, whilst pregnant. Plus, took my granddaughter for two lots of normal childhood vaccines. My other grandbaby has had none. Stings my nose when strong, like alcohol would, says somebody else. This is kind of a mixed-up stream.
Yeah, sometimes they're difficult to follow because they're out of sequence. Okay, getting back to the original question, from my experience, they shed most of the time, but it does increase when they are sick. Same with the smell. It increases when they are sick. I think it is to do with the jabber's bodies trying to detox when there is too much negative stuff happening in their bodies. And another one says, oh, no, this is the same one. And we, the unvaxxed, also have to deal with their mental issues. They are forgetting everything. And just like Alzheimer's patients, you cannot confront them with it or else they get aggressive.
I don't know what that is. All right, the next one, we'll duck this in. I actually also noticed with a friend of mine, unjabbed, but she had an astrocytoma, a brain tumor, that had been stable for over a decade. But after the rollout of the jabs, it doubled in size all of a sudden. Unjabbed, remember, she's just around the jab. When I hugged her on a visit, the whole side of my face got that burning sensation like you get hugging a jabbed person. She passed away within a year. And the next one. I think they shed most of the time, too, because Pfizer's papers talked about peak shedding times. That implies they shed other times as well, just not as much, supposedly. Someone says, that is so sad. The next one. What are the peak shedding times? I'm not around them enough to know. Most of my jab friends I no longer see. My cousin's mental health seems to be in sharp decline, and of course, she is jabbed. She is still kind, though. So I hope this gives you all an idea. It's a little quick tour of just some of the texture of suffering, an incredible diversity of things that go wrong in the human body after these injections of the bioweapon are made. And I do want to reiterate that I went to a biopharmacy recently, and I asked one of the clerks, I said, hi, because I saw people standing by the window where they line up to get their boosters. I said, how many of these a day do you give? And the guy said, oh, about 50 a day. So
boy,
they're still powering these things into people's bodies, the bivalent booster. It's not dead. And if they, the powers that be, want to roll out a bird flu, avian flu pandemic, they will. If they want to roll out a Marburg fear pandemic, both with a vax, avian and Marburg, they will. And people have, as one of their most base of human instincts, fight or flight, which is fear. And they're going to say, heal me, save me, protect me, and they'll roll up their sleeves again. Most of them will. All they needed are a few horror scenes on the nightly news to drive the point home that we have another pandemic, and it kills people.
I mean, it's a clever way of finishing people off. I mean, these people are going to be, if there is some type of influenza virus that goes viral, no pun intended, these people are going to be ill-prepared to confront that. You know, their immune systems are struggling already. And it's known that when you've been vaccinated for, like, influenza, you have less capacity to deal with coronaviruses because of this competitive antibodies. They compete with each other. Your body can only generate so many antibodies towards a pathogen, and these people are all primed to respond to coronavirus and really not that well. They're going to be toast if they confront a really virulent influenza virus.
Oh, exactly. All right, there's a lot more to bring to you. There's a very interesting thread. Not just the vaxxed are getting sick. There's more examples of the unvaxxed getting nailed, obviously, by exposure. So we'll get to that next time. Okay, anything else? Wonderful job. We're putting it out there.
Yeah, that's all I can think of for now.
Okay. All right, very good. Okay.
Okay, thank you,
Talk
Jeff.
Talk soon. Good night.
Okay, good night, everyone.
And we will be right back with Hour 3 for you coming up next.